Okay, good evening, everyone. First of all, I want to post a Michlor Achsanya, thank the Ginsbargs, which are close family of ours. Rivka and I are our cousins. I'm pretty confident that our ancestors are shepping quite a bit of Nachas, seeing the partnership that exists between the Ginsbargs and the Shockets, and certainly the greatest contribution that the Ginsbargs can make to Hadar in the form of our Talmida Sila, who probably is not too happy that I just called her out. And I want to welcome everybody. We're very excited. This is our first community shiur, the Yisrael Nas and the Chai Esther Brookstein community shiur. First one for Hadar. We're hoping to, Mirtz Hashem, have a few throughout the entire year. And please God, to have the second one, please God, at the beginning of February in Aventurin, Bell Harbor. Location to be announced a little bit later. What I wanted to do tonight is, given that we are a school and we're a Torah institution, to try to merge the two together and to perhaps glean from this coming week's Parsha many of the chinuch lessons that we can learn out from our Avos and Imahos. We all know the very famous concept of Maisa Avos Simon Labanim, that we can learn from our Avos how to act, and I would dare say, as we will see through the eyes of some of our Achronim, perhaps even some of the lessons we can learn of how not to act, and to be able to hopefully walk out of here with some practical ways in which hopefully we can improve as parents and mechanchim. I always say that all parents are mechanchim, whether it's professional or it's recreational. At the end of the day, we are responsible for our children and the education of our children in the home. And much of what we can learn from our Avos and Imahos. So what I'd like to do, if you could turn the page, I always like to make the disclaimer, as many Rabbanim do, that these sources are there to help in our learning. Please do not feel that you have to focus on them or worry at the volume of Hebrew. We're not going to be reading all of it, but some of it I couldn't bear to delete because it was so articulate, so beautiful in terms of the way in which the various Achronim give us insight into understanding the various relationships we're going to talk about, that I just didn't feel right about cutting some of the things out. So don't worry about it. If you like it, enjoy it. We're not going to read all of it inside. You're certainly welcome to take it home with you and learn it on your own, but certainly don't allow it to impede your ability to learn. So we know that in this coming week's parsha, the first twins were born. Vayigdul ha'ne'arim, source number one. Vayu'esav ish yodei atzayid, ish sadeh, v'yakov, ish tam yoshev ahalim. Right? The twins were born, and Esav is this hunter who's really out and about in the workplace. Yaakov is a masmid. Yaakov is a person who's learning shtark in the base medrash, much more reserved, much more reticent, kind of hanging out in the base medrash. One of the most troubling psukim in this week's parsha is the very next pasuk. It's one that everyone grapples with, many of the commentaries grapple with, every parent grapples with, this two parents seemingly not on the same page. I'm sure in all of our marriages we are always on the same page when parenting our children, but our Avos and Imos were not always on the same page. It happened by Abraham and Sarah, and it was no different when it came to Yitzchak and Rivka. I would say probably more pronounced when it came to Yitzchak and to Rivka, and that's something that we're going to analyze tonight. And the pasuk says, "Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav ki tzayid befiv, v'Rivka oheves es Yaakov." For some reason, Yitzchak saw something in Esav. There was something that really appealed to him. What that is, we're going to have to try to unpack. But Yitzchak saw something in Esav that was appealing to him, and therefore he gravitated toward Esav. Kitzai befiv, because hunting was in his mouth. What that means, what you're going to try to have to understand. V'Rivka oheves es Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. We have less of an understanding, or I would say less of an expectation to try to understand Rivka. I think we can all understand where Rivka was coming from. Yaakov was the Ishtam Yoshev Alim, he was the good boy. He did all his mitzvos, he put on his tefillin in the morning, he went to shul, he had his chavrusa, he did gemilas chasadim, right? It's not hard for us to swallow why Rivka oheves es Yaakov. The one we have to try to understand is why exactly did Yitzchak, what did he see in Esav that he gravitated towards? You know, what did he see that ultimately generated this affection towards Esav? So Rashi gives us an interesting insight, which really doesn't help us. In fact, it really complicates matters further. Rashi says, what does Yodei Atzayid mean? Latsud v'laramos es aviv b'fiv v'sha'alo. Esau was a very smart, cunning individual. He was able to entrap his father, ensnare his father with his words. By doing what? He would say the following to his father, Abba, Tati, Heyach ma'asun es hamelach v'esatan. How am I supposed to take off my source when it comes to salt? Why? Because Esav's intention, his motivation was, if my father sees how makbid I am on being taking off maisos of even the salt, which we all know is not a chiyuv, there's no obligation to take maisos of salt, how much more so must I be makbid, must I be so scrupulous in doing mitzvos? And it was that that Yitzchak says Rashi was kind of ensnared by. He saw this diuk ha-mitzvos, this hakpada when it comes to mitzvos, and says Rashi, that was what Yitzchak saw in Esav, and so therefore that generated a certain affection. We of course know that the Ma'amar Chazal also tell us how makbid, how sensitive Esav was to his kibra v'aim. He was always running to provide food for his father. He was running to do acts of kibra v'aim. And that too, as a father, you see your child doing that, you're so sensitive to it, you can understand, says Rashi, the Ma'amar Chazal, why Yitzchak may have this affection towards Esav. The problem is that at the end of the day, no matter how you slice it and dice it, and we're going to really have to try to struggle with this, it doesn't really hold a lot of water. And the reason why it doesn't hold a lot of water is simply because at the end of the day, even if you want to say that there was something about Esav that appealed to Yitzchak, there's no question that Yaakov was the greater tzaddik, right? At the end of the day, you want to say that Yitzchak loved both of his sons, that I understand. But he loves Esav, and the Torah goes out of its way to say he loved Esav, and Rivka loved Yaakov as to like kind of like mutually exclusive to the exclusion of the other son. A little strange that that would be the case. So what we're going to try to understand is, was Yitzchak really fooled? Did Yitzchak know the score that had ulterior motive, had an agenda in terms of the chinuch of this particular child, knowing that he wasn't a cookie-cutter model? And what exactly was going on through the mind of Yitzchak? We'll have a little bit of a perspective of Rivka as well, but like I said, it's a little easier to swallow when it comes to Rivka, given the tzaddik that Yaakov was. So we're going to give four different approaches in the Achronim, fascinating approaches that I discovered, that I explored, some of which don't really have a lot to do with parenting per se, but have a lot to do with Jewish philosophy, and I teach a Machshava class in school, and anytime I have an opportunity to find something that hopefully will, in addition to making us better people and parents, but intensifying our level of Abdus to Hashem, I jump at the chance, so you'll forgive me if we don't get to the parenting parts a little bit later in the shir. But just to give us a little bit of insight into maybe some other things that will help us in terms of our Avodas Hashem. The first approach is the name of the Netziv. The Netziv very famously was the Rosh Yeshiva of Lodzim, of Ephraim Shapiro, when he came to speak in Hadar, right before Yom Kippur, said to our Benos Torah that the job of the Rebbe is to ensure that anytime you quote a commentary, you give the background, that they should feel not only that they're learning the commentary, but that they should understand who the person was. So now every day in school, when I quote another source, if I forget to mention the historical background, I got a girl saying, Rabbi Shapiro said, so I'm always kept on my toes, on my game, making sure to give them a little background. The Netziv, very controversially, for those who do not know, the Netziv actually closed Volozhin in 1892 for a number of different reasons, due to a lot of pressure from the Russian government. And even though he got a lot of pressure not to close the yeshiva, he felt that ultimately that was the right thing. And you know, you always get a little chizuk understanding that leaders have to sometimes make the difficult choices, even when some things seem on the surface to be one way. We have to trust their insight and their Das Torah the other way. In any event, the Netziv gives a very interesting answer. I like this answer because it makes the Avos and Imos feel a little bit more like human, as opposed to somehow we have absolutely no relatability to them. And it allows us, I think, this is actually a nice kind of piskon per, opens up the doors for us to relate to the Avos as parents, and hopefully for us to be able to grow from them. The Netziv says as follows, you know what, Yitzchak and Rivka, they were always on the same page. Don't think for a moment, says the Netziv, that Yitzchak had more of an affection to Esav, Rivka had more of an affection to Yaakov, and they were chiluke deos. No, they were on the absolute same page. Ushnem yadu deikra zera asher alav nemer ki v'Yitzchak yikari lecha zera bi Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak. They knew who was going to be the progenitor, who was going to carry the Mesorah. They knew only one of them was going to, and they knew it was Yaakov, based on the Pasuk, because the Pasuk says, ki bi Yitzchak yikari lecha zera. In Yitzchak, not all of Yitzchak, meaning only part of Yitzchak, a.k.a. Yaakov. So what was going on over there? And who Yaakov Yoshev all Avram Batorah? Yaakov was the grandson of Avram Avinu. He was learning Torah with him. V'rak Ava ha-chozeres ha-yol Yitzchak es Esav d'mishamish lo ke'avdo v'nene b'shimusho ma'od. What was it that Yitzchak gravitated towards? It wasn't that they thought in the long term that Esau was going to be the carrying of our Masorah. They both knew Yaakov was going to be the one carrying that baton. what was it that Yehav Yitzchak is Esav? Listen, it's unbelievable. Esav was Yitzchak's shamash. Esav was the one who Taka took care. Remember, Yaakov was blind. He had an aide. Esav was his aide. And when somebody does a lot of nice things for you, Ava results. So the Netziv has explained to us, it wasn't that there was some dichotomy going on, or there was some diametric opposition between Rivka and Yitzchak in terms of the chinuch of their children. They were both, they had the same score. They knew Yaakov was going to be the carrier of the Mesorah. But what the Torah is telling us over here, interestingly, is that the reason why Yitzchak had an additional feeling of affection towards his son Esav was because of what Esav did for him, which isn't, I wouldn't say a direct lesson in terms of chinuch of children, but I do think that at times we fall into the trap of the children who don't give us attitude when we ask them to do something, don't, you know, give us a problem when we want them to do us a favor. We naturally treat those children sometimes a little bit nicer, which is understandable as human beings, but we also have to understand that even if at some times a child isn't doing exactly what you ask them to do, to understand that starting to demonstrate that affection towards one more than the other, you don't know what's going on in that kid's head that day. It's important to be sensitive, because as you see that unfortunately as a result of this differentiation of affection, you know, some very damaging things can result. So I just found it very interesting that Netziv doesn't have some eye-opening philosophical approach, but simply a pragmatic, by virtue of the fact that Esav was his shamish, the guy who, you know, served Yitzchak. As a result, it generated a certain level of affection, and as a result of that affection, he kind of favored Esav a little more than Yaakov, even though Yitzchak inherently knew that Yaakov was going to be the person who was going to carry the Mesorah. I found that to be inspiring only because as we begin to discuss some of the parenting lessons that we can learn from them, if we relate to them a little bit more, knowing that Yitzchak was a human being, and he also had normal emotions, and those normal emotions were created and caused by the way he was treated, just like us, that it allows us to have a certain level of relatability that I think oftentimes we think of as the avos and the imos are kind of off onto the side, that it's not shy for us to connect to them at all. It allows us kind of to take that first step forward to realize how relatable in fact they are. What I would like to share with you is a second approach. And here's where we're really going to have to roll our sleeves up. I tell you, I know it's a community sheer, but those who've heard me speak before know that I'm not into like the lecture. I like learning with people, not speaking to people. So I'm hoping that all of us together will try to struggle through this and understand exactly what's going on over here. So please feel free to interrupt and chime in at any point in time, especially in the crowd that we have before us. The Ber Yosef, who is Rav Salant, never heard of him until I discovered him in another sefer, and ended up finding his sefer online. It's amazing what you can do online these days. You can find these svarim that you didn't have in your library, didn't even know existed until you saw it quoted somewhere else. And the Ber Yosef actually gives an entirely different approach and gives us a tremendous amount of insight into Yitzchak's brain. To understand exactly what was going on in Yitzchak's brain, what was going on in Yitzchak's mind when he was determining this Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav, what it was that he gravitated towards Esav. And he explains with the following introduction based on the Rambam and Shmona Prakim. The Rambam wrote a sefer called Shmona Prakim. Shmona Prakim is actually an introductory sefer to Pirkei Avos, in which the Rambam articulates, verbalizes, writes down all of what he believes are the ethics, the core values that Yiddishkeit has, kind of as a hakdama to what Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos. And the Rambam explains that there was actually a machlokas between what he calls the Chachmei Mechkar and the Chazal. Chachmei Mechkar, for lack of a better term, are the scholars of the secular world versus the philosophy of our Chazal. With the following question that is debated through our centuries of time, and that is, which is better? The person who does not have a Yitzhahara to violate an Avera, to not do a mitzvah, and overcomes it? Or the person who does not have the Yitzhahara, never has the Taiva, never has the Cheshek to do something, and is just able to do mitzvahs, he feels so close to the Ribono Shalom, he has such a kiruv to Hashem that he never has this desire to do anything other than doing the mitzvos? Or is it better to be the person who has a Yetzara and really has to fight it, has to be Kovish, has Yitzro, has to really overcome it, but he has the Yetzara internally and he has to really overcome it? Which of those two people is better? The person that doesn't have the Yetzara and just is able to run through the brick wall, or the person who really has to fight it? It's not so simple for him. He may delay, he may not be running to do that mitzvah, but in the end he's able to overcome it and be mekayem the mitzvah. Interesting question, right? go through the ages. So he quotes a machlokas between, he called the Chachmei Mechkar and the Chachmei Chazal. The scholars of the world believe that a chassid, a pious individual, is one who has no yetzahara, the person who has no desire to overcome, no desire to have to deal or confront with evil inclination, the person who is able to simply just jump headfirst into doing mitzvos and does not have any yetzahara that's impeding his progress. That's what the interesting, that's the Chachmei Mechkar, the non, what you would call chachamim that we hold near dear and true in terms of our Mesorah. The Chachmei Mesorah, our Chazal, actually dispute this and say, no, the person who's better is the person who has a Yetzihara, who's really confronted with, I don't want to do this mitzvah, fights through it, goes back and forth, learns the Musar, learns about the mitzvah, decides I'm going to jump headfirst into it, overcomes, runs through the brick wall, and does the mitzvah. Those, and we know Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Hakovish is Yitzro, right? That's definitely a very core value that we have in our Mesorah about overcoming our evil inclination. So the Rambam in Shmonek Prakim quotes this as a machlokes. Which is better, the chassid, the person who has no evil inclination that can just do it, or the person has to run through the brick wall? And the Rambam suggests that actually they're not really arguing, and he suggests that both of these values apply in Yiddishkeit. And he says it depends on the type of mitzvah you're doing. And as we know, the Rambam has two categories of mitzvos, mitzvos that we call mitzvos sichlios and mitzvos shmios. Mitzvos sichlios are the mitzvos that you don't need the Torah to tell you to do, right? We talked about it last week with my Talmidos, right? Kibbut Avim, the reason why we don't recite a bracha on Kibbut Avim is because the whole world values Kibbut Avim. The word, the Torah, not to have the mitzvah of Kibbut Avim, hopefully most people still value in our society, you know, the respecting of our elders, the respecting of our parents. Right, those are mitzvos sichlios. We don't need the Torah necessarily to tell us not to kill somebody. And hopefully the overwhelming majority of our society do not feel that urge that without the Torah they would be, you know, having to fight. Those are mitzvos sichlios. And then we have mitzvos shmios, which are mitzvos that were the Torah not to be in existence, we wouldn't necessarily be observing. Right? The mitzvah of shaking a lulav and esrog, the mitzvahs of truos and maestros, right? The mitzvah of Shabbos, mitzvah of, you know, any mitzvah that is more, I would say, unique and ruchani, more spiritual to Yiddishkeit, those mitzvahs, keeping kosher, shatnis, right? All the mitzvahs that, you know, there's nothing immoral or unethical about participating in those averos, but the Torah says that we should do it, and therefore we should do it. Says the Rambam, when you're talking about the mitzvos sichlios, the mitzvos that not to kill, not to steal, the better person is the person that doesn't have a yitzhar. If you're a person that has to fight not to kill somebody, you're not as good as the guy that doesn't have that yitzhar. That says the Rambam, if you're dealing with a mitzvah sichli, if you're dealing with a mitzvah that you don't necessarily need the Torah to instruct us, and you still have the yitzhar, and you're really, oh, should I kill the person? Should I not? If you have that, you're not going to be on the same level as the chassid, who doesn't have any yitzhar in that area. And so therefore the Rambam gives credibility to these Chachmei Mechkar to say, in that category, in fact, it is better to be a chassid that doesn't have a yitzhar. However, when it comes to mitzvos shmios, when it comes to mitzvos that without the Torah we never would have been commanded to do, and you decide to do them without any yitzhara, then the person who says to himself, wait a second, Hashem is commanding me to do this mitzvah. I'm not even sure I understand why I'm doing this mitzvah. Maybe I shouldn't do this mitzvah, right? We tell our kids all the time, you don't keep kosher just because you don't like lobster. You keep kosher because the Torah says to keep kosher. It's not logical. There's nothing intrinsically, you know, logical in that understanding. You're doing it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to keep kosher. In that category of mitzvah, the person who has to be kovish yitzhar, the person who has to overcome their evil inclination, the person who has to fight through the wall because it doesn't make sense on the surface, but yet they're going to do it anyway, that person is on a higher level than the person who doesn't have any chisorin, so to speak, of emunah or faith to be able to do so. And therefore, says the Rambam, it depends on what type of mitzvah. The mitzvah sichli, the person who has no yitzhar is going to be better than the person who has yitzhar, because no one should have the desire to kidnap, kill, or do any of those terrible things. Mitzvah shmi, those mitzvahs which wouldn't make sense, so to speak, without the Torah's instruction, those mitzvahs, having the yitzhar fighting against you and you're doing it anyway, is on a higher level. Says the Ber Yosef of Salant, based on this introduction of the Rambam, this is what Yitzchak thought in his mind. He said to himself, I know already Yaakov, big tzaddik. Big tzaddik, he doesn't have any desire to kill people, he stays in his learning, he has no yitzhar when it comes to those mitzvos sichli, but he also doesn't have a yitzhar when it comes to the mitzvos shmi. He never heard one word from Yaakov saying, I'm not putting on tefillin that morning. He never heard from Yaakov to say, I'm not taking a, you know, trumas and maestros. He never heard from Yaakov, I'm not going to machlis oreach. He never heard from Yaakov, I'm not going to visit that sick person. Yaakov didn't have the Yitzhar when it came to the ones that you shouldn't have it for, but Yosef didn't have it when the ones that you should have for. As opposed to Esav, where yeah, he had the Yitzhar when it came to the mitzvah sichli, right? Kitzai b'fiv, we know he was a murderer, right? He had the Yitzhar when it comes to those things. Says the Be'er Yosef, given the fact that he had the Yitzhar in those areas which he shouldn't have had, also means he had the Yitzhar when it came to mitzvah shmias. He had the Yitzhar when it came to kibud avim. He had the Yitzhar when it came to trumos and maestros. He had the Yitzhar when it came to keeping Shabbos. He had that Yitzhar. And what Yitzchak saw in his son was, you know what? He has this Yitzhar, what is he doing with it? He's trying to persevere. He's trying to run through that brick wall. Yeah, he has that Yitzhar that Yaakov, my other son, doesn't have when it comes to those mitzvos that you should have a Yitzhara for. And even though he has the Yitzhara, he's trying to persevere, he's trying to fight through the wall, he's trying to be able to overcome those challenges to be able to do it. Wait a second, this guy may have something. This guy may in fact have something above and beyond his other brother. He's able to be Kodesh and Sitzur in an area that his brother doesn't need to do. And in our eyes, that's much more virtuous. And so therefore Yitzchak thought to himself, you know what? Maybe both of my sons are going to be tzaddikim. Maybe I'll have my one son who's going to be the cookie cutter, the one that's going to be perfect, the one that's going to be pristine, and that's amazing, unbelievable. And I have another son that's going to be going at it a little bit of a different way, but being Kodesh Yitzchak, he's overcoming those challenges. He's still developing a relationship with Hashem. Maybe, in fact, both of my children are tzaddikim. What was Rivka thinking? Why did Rivka know Yitzchak was not correct? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Why would you think, if you know anything about Rivka, I'll give you a little hint. Rivka when she was pregnant, yeah? Rivka when she was pregnant. Well, what did Rivka do when she was pregnant? They were kicking. Beis Knesset, Beis Medrash, Avodah Zarah. Where did she go to get some etza, some advice? Who'd she go to? Shem Ve'Aver. And what did Shem Ve'Aver say? Shnei Goyim Bevitneich. You have two very different, diametrically opposed nations rumbling inside of you. Rivka knew before these children were born, only one of them was going to be a tzaddik. Only one of them was going to be carrying the baton. It was great that Yitzchak wanted to be Dan the Kafskos. And Yitzchak was the Karbon. He was a Tamim. He was a person who only saw things through a pure prism. Rivka lived in a little bit of a different world, which we'll talk about a little bit later. She was able to identify things. She knew what was right, what was wrong. And she had the presence of mind and that Ruach HaKodesh that she was given with Shem Ve'Aver to know only one of them was going to be able to carry this baton. And so therefore Rivka understood, as opposed to Yitzchak in this particular situation, that it would be impossible for them both to be tzaddikim. And therefore, knowing that both of them could not be tzaddikim, and Yaakov already, even if you learn it through the Rambam's eyes, that didn't have that Kovish Yisitzro need, nevertheless, Esav couldn't possibly be the person he was presenting. And as a result, if he couldn't be that person who he was presenting, there was no way ultimately he could be a righteous individual. I found this to be like unbelievably fascinating, just in terms of like philosophically. Yeah.
Talking about the background of both Yitzchak and Rivka.
Totally.
Yitzchak was Yaakov, and Rivka came from...
We're going to talk about that. No, it's very interesting. We're going to see something the verse says later on that idea. But I just thought that the Be'er Yosef's insight, just in terms of like, A, the Rambam, this is an interesting concept that the Rambam has in Shmona Prokin, and how the Be'er Yosef applies it, but that you see, you know, what the values were, and what was motivating Yitzchak. That Yitzchak clearly, the way the Be'er Yosef understanding through the eyes of the Rambam, this understanding of Kovesh Yisitzro, that mitzvot, certainly the mitzvot that were shmios, weren't meant to be easy. So if any of us are having an easier time with them, we have to ask ourselves, do we really understand what we're doing? I always tell the story that my wife's great-great-great-grandfather, Chasam Sofer, very famously, on Hoshana Rabbah one year, got up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and davened, and he learned, and he answered Shilas afterwards, and he whispered in his grandchild's ear, after davening, I'm going to die very soon. And his grandchild said to him, Zadie, like, how do you know you didn't have any health care? And he said, I woke up in the morning, and I had no problem getting up. I davened, one of my best davenings, there was no challenge. People lined up to ask me questions, no problems. When I realized that there's no impediments, no obstacles laying in front of me, in terms of my working on my relationship with Hashem, I know I no longer have a place in this world. And 3 days later, Chasam Sofer passed away. So, what's interesting about the Be'er Yosef, just, again, has nothing to do with parenting, but just in terms of chizuk for us as Ovdei Hashem, as B'nai B'nos Torah, that's just because you're adult doesn't mean we're not working on our what it means to be a B'nai B'nos Torah, is to understand that we should really be looking inside ourselves, working harder on the mitzvahs that come easier to us, making sure that we have continued challenge, those that are coming easier to us, trying to identify areas that maybe we could be doing better, but there should never be, we should be on the treadmill. The treadmill should never be ending. We should be continuing to run, not right now because I have a herniated disc, but we should continue to be running and to understand that that's what Avodas Hashem is. You know, I once had a Rebbe who used to say, Avodas Hashem is an escalator. You're either going up or you're going down. There's no status quo, there's no plateauing. So it's an important chizuk just in terms of our understanding from a philosophical perspective of the way Yitzchak perceived, you know, what it meant to be an Eved Hashem, and even with his Rasha Esav, understanding that maybe he was the higher person because he was really working hard to grow closer to Hashem through doing mitzvahs. But now let's get down to business. And that's really for us to walk away, hopefully, with a couple of valuable, powerful lessons in terms of parenting. I will make the following disclaimer. I am by no means an experienced parent. I happen to have a child who's almost 16 years old, but that I'm far senior many of the people in this room, not an age, just an experience. And so whatever I'm sharing, I'm speaking to myself, of course, as well, but I found it to be eye-opening in terms of the way we are to be mechanech our children, and understanding how do we have to differentiate. I don't only talk about it in terms of our educational approach, but in terms of our emotional approach when it comes to parenting. There's no question that though the Ber Yosef suggests that maybe Yitzchak was in fact, I don't want to say the word fooled, but there's no question that Yitzchak, according to the Ber Yosef, wasn't sure exactly where Esav was. Most of the commentaries that I saw are under the impression that Yitzchak knew exactly what the score was. Despite knowing what the score was, he had to adjust his chinuch approach for this child. How do we know that Yitzchak knew what the score was? What indications in the psukim do we even know? Meaning, you could read through the psukim, and most of us, you know, Kriyas HaTorah, we're zipping through, most of us may not even pick up on a very obvious indication that already Yitzchak clearly knew something was going on. So if you'll take a look at verse number 5, there's a little bit later in the story, right? Yaakov comes to Yitzchak to get his bracha. He's right now got the furry, you know, skins, and he comes to Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is a little confused, and we know the famous words, you know, Kol Kol Yaakov, Adayim Yidei Esav. But Yitzchak says something to Yaakov, and he says, Vayom Yitzchak El Yaakov, Gishana, come close, V'amushcha, I'll feel you, my son. Hatazeh B'ni Esav Imlo, I want to see, are you Esav or not? What was the suffix Yitzchak had? What did Yaakov say before this moment that created a doubt in the mind of Yitzchak? So Rashi tells us, Amar Yitzchak Belibo, Ein Derech Esav Lios Shem Shemayim Shagar Befiv. Yaakov came in, he was talking about Hashem. Yitzchak was not used to hearing those types of words coming. I didn't hear Baruch Hashem from Esav. Hear fantastic, hear great, hear what can I do for you, Tati. But he did not hear the words Baruch Hashem, Shagar Befiv, that were frequent in his mouth. And he wasn't used to Esav talking this way, which is why he said, hey, whoever you are, you need to come a little closer. I need to find out who you really are. So there's no question, before we go any further, it is very clear Yitzchak knew the score. Yitzchak knew the score, otherwise he would never have asked, had he not known what Esav was yet, he never would have asked Yaakov, whom he thought was Esav, to come close because of this Shem Shemayim Shagar Befiv aspect. So it's clear that Yitzchak knew what was going on. Which makes the question even greater. Well, if Yitzchak really did know what was going on, then what's the Vayahav Yitzchak es Esav? What was it about Yitzchak to Esav that generated this affection? So I want to share with you, it's an unbelievable piece. I was really debating, I included it in at the last minute. It's very long, we're not going to read the whole thing. It's really not that difficult in terms of Hebrew. I want to encourage everybody to read this. It will change your life in terms of the chinuch that you're going to have in your children. We're going to read part of it, but I felt too bad. There wasn't like, I started copy and pasting, and I literally, every paragraph, I'm like, no, I got to include this piece. No, I got to include, and at the end, I'm like, basically redid my packet to include the entire piece, because I was like, there's no way for you to be able to do so. So what's going on over here? So, if you'll turn the page, we're going to read a little bit of it because I don't do as good of a job as the Zichron Meir. quite frankly, I never heard of the Zichron Meir until I saw it quoted somewhere, and then I ended up finding the source of it online, the actual Sefer, HebrewBooks.org. It's fantastic, and they do a lot of reprintings now, which is Manukah, and very clear print. I highly recommend it. And this Zichron Meir was a Rav of Rubin. He was born in Kovno, and was a Rosh Yeshiva in Lita, in Lithuania, and he ultimately became a Rosh Yeshiva, but the Yeshiva in Haifa many years later, and he wrote a Sefer called Zichron Meir. And in the Sefer, he asks this question, and he gives the following explanation. He says the following. Actually, let's start with the words aval. Aval hezber ha'inyon hu. Here's really pshat. No question, he knew exactly who Esav was. No question, he knew Yaakov was the Ishtam Yoshev Olam. No question that the fact that he was blind impeded, but we know Rivka certainly communicated. They weren't like, you know, behind the mechitza. He was well aware of exactly who Esav was. So what was it? So he says as follows, Hezbar ha'inyanu. Read this with me, unbelievable words. Here's pshat. This is what you should know in terms of chinuch. Ben kiyosur mi'aderach hatov. When a child, Rachmana Litzlan, goes off the derech a little bit, imu gam boit ba'aviv imo b'rabo. If he's kicking his parents and his rabbi, and we don't mean literally, but he's completely rebelling, absolutely no respect for the role models that lay before him. Then in those situations, both in terms of the influence they're going to have on the other children in the home and the overall discord that it will cause in the home, that's the type of child that you know you need to distance from. As long as they're mechabi their parents, the gamiyapes atzmo, they're pleasant to be around. Verotza Ramos is aviv shumisnai karoi, and he's even trying to fool his parent. Right? There's something to be said about the fact that he's even making effort to impress his parent, even if internally it may not actually resonate. Az kedai lekariv oso. No, in that case, you go the opposite extreme. You got to be makariv then. Ki yesh tifa, because there's hope. Ulai b'meshach hazman yashuv midark hara. Because perhaps over time, but you continuing to be makari, then maybe they will come back. Yeah, he had a lot of rishos. He was machabir's parents at a very high level, right? The British rabbi tells us that he would be machabid his parents by dressing in a royal way because he valued that mitzvah so much. In fact, as you continue on, v'chein yesh b'medish al ha'pasuk v'yira Yaakov ma'od, that when Yaakov was going to meet up with Esav later, what was he really scared of, says the Bereishis Rabba? She'Yaakov pachan me'Esav y'amar. Yaakov thought, he was fearful of Esav, and he thought to himself, kol ha'shonim halalu hu yoshiv v'mechabit ha'torav. Tomer shu ba'alai mikroch kibar av'eim. He's better than me. All those years that I was absent running away, he's been doing the mitzvah of kibar av'eim. He's got a riches yamim, as the Torah is going to promise, right? Yaakov himself recognized that there was something that Esav was at least trying to do on some level to try to meet the needs, the expectations of his father. And as a result, says the Zichron Meir, when you see a child, when the child is completely off and just rebels against it and creating tremendous dispute in the home, that's one type of child. When a child is rebelling, but at the same time is trying on some level to reach out, even if he's not doing it for the right reasons, that's not the child we push away. That's not the child that we say, you're a lost cause. In fact, if you'll take a look on the next page, fascinating, never picked up on it until you look at these words again. If you know Ivrit, you will appreciate how this diuk is actually so spot on. Take a look at the third paragraph of the next page, which says, Ubazem uvan. Ubazem uvan ma shenemar vayehav Yitzchak es Esav, the Rivka Oheves as Yaakov, right? The pasuk says Yitzchak loved Esav, Rivka loved Yaakov. The Lechora Kasha came on Shenemar of the Rivka Oheves, Tzarech Hayol Lechtov Yitzchak Ohev, right? What does word Oheves mean? Oheves doesn't mean you did something. It means it's part of who you are. You're Oheves. So Rivka is Oheves Yaakov. It should say Yitzchak Ohev as Esav. What do you mean Vayehav? As if he's doing something. So listen to this.
He showed Ahava, Abel Rivka Oheves, Be'emes as Yaakov.
Ahava pnimis tevius umemela muvan shiyitzak lo yifriya lo. Right. So in other words, says the Zichron Meir, what is Vayahav? It's an action. Yitzchak may not have actually felt the love towards Esav. What was he doing? He was showing him. He was acting as if he loved him. Because he understood that as much as it was paining him to see the way Esav was behaving, he knew he had a shot. And if he didn't show that affection, if he didn't actually actively work on demonstrating that affection towards Esav, he knew he would have no chance. Fascinating. Rivka didn't need to work on it. It was natural. She just loved him. It was an emotional result of seeing who Yaakov was becoming. Not so with Esav. Vayehav Yitzchak. Yitzchak had to work on actively going ahead and loving, showing that affection towards Yaakov. And the last paragraph, the second last paragraph, which is really scary, is the following. This is something we need to learn about when it comes to educating our children. So we really need to have wisdom. Sometimes you gotta bring close, sometimes you gotta distance. Esmila karev, vesmila rachek. Who to go ahead and bring close and who to distance. And here he goes, which is a little bit scary here. Rabim chalalim hipilu. There are so many who unfortunately have fallen. Harim shol yadu chachmazu, who did not have this wisdom, these parents. Eich v'tap el b'vneim, to really understand each one of their children. Ki talking, and this is so big, it gives me chills. I'm just going to tell you what it is, and it's going to blow you away. Ki talking she'ilu hayam b'kaimim. The Heshev Levavos Abanim, where so many of these families working on bringing the Lev Avos to their Banim, Hayu Mashpim Abneim, Shu Gam He Mekayim Lev Banim Alavosa. That were those parents would not be quick to just dismiss and say, you're not exactly what I envisioned, you're not the model that I had for myself, you're not what all I've put my sweat and tears on, and were those people to not do that, but instead just shower them with love. The Heshev Lev Avos, the Lev of the Avos goes on the bottom, guess what's going to happen? There's going to be reciprocity. Then there's going to be Lev Banim Alavosam. Then the children are going to appreciate that, and ultimately you will get through it. So this is like unbelievable. I mean, it's an unbelievable piece. And in summary, basically what he's saying is that Yitzchak knew the score very clearly. He knew exactly what he was dealing with. And he also was a mechanech par excellence. He'd be the head of Eish HaTorah. He understood exactly what it meant to be mechanech of somebody who's really going off. But Esav didn't present as that person who's completely rebellious. No, he at least had a certain presence of mind, a certain respect for his parents, that he wanted to at least give off the impression to his parents that he wanted something. And as a result, when you have that type of child, pushing them away is not the answer. You have to shower them with love. And I think that, although Baruch Hashem, hopefully none of us will be confronted with a child who is, you know, on that road, I do think that there's a lot of insight into it in terms of how we educate our children. I think that all of us, most of us have younger children, but as our children get older and they're exploring and they're asking questions and you're starting to think, why are you asking that question? You know, like, Amuna, 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 you should be just believing in Hashem and doing the mitzvahs and not and we have to realize that A, part of strengthening their Amuna is through the exploration, and B, giving them a little bit of space to understand that it's okay to ask those questions and to shower them that love to understand that we're going to get through this and we're going to power through it. But to push them away is such a mistake, and we only want the best for our kids and we think we have the answers to every single thing that our kids want, and unfortunately at times it's not the case. We don't know every kid, and even though they came from us, doesn't necessarily mean that we have total insight into who they are. And as they grow older, we have less insight into who they are because we see them less and they share less with us. That it's important to have the presence of mind that not every kid is the same, and each kid needs their own chinuch lenaro lenara apidarko, and to have that presence of mind to not require them to all fit the same mold, and to give them a little bit of that flexibility. A very fascinating explanation of Yitzchak that really requires a lot of introspection and reflection when we walk out of here. One of my close friends, Rabbi Goldberg, once told me that the goal of every shiur he gives is that you should walk in out differently than you walk in. You should have tension. I tell that to my students all the time. There should be tension every time you walk out of my class. And I explain that not the tension like where you feel uncomfortable with me. The tension with that something that you thought originally is not what you thought now. And it should be when you're laying in bed at night and thinking about it, like it should be keeping you up at night. That's the goal of every shiur. You should walk out and put your head on the pillow and say to yourself, I can't fall asleep. It's gnawing at me. And when you're driving carpool the next day, you say to yourself, you know what? Maybe I need to readjust something or reflect on that which we learned the night before. The fourth approach, which I wouldn't have the guts to say, only the Gedolei Yisrael of Hirsch Rav Shlomo Shneur Hirsch, the great German philosopher, great German Rav, shared something that I, you know, sometimes you read some of the stuff that they write and you're like, somebody writes that nowadays, they'd be, you know, in big trouble. But Rav Hirsch gives an entirely different approach. And I thought it was fascinating. I wanted to share it with you. And I think it's also a very practical insight into something that as parents we do quite often. And certainly with younger children, and as they get older, is something that we need to be a little bit more sensitive. And I talk to myself, obviously, as much as I talk to everybody else. Well, first writes as follows. The second factor, which only could have pernicious effect, was the difference of feelings of the parents toward the children. Unity and complete agreement of parents in the education, and the same feelings and love to all their children, even to those who are not so good, yet just those require most of all, even more than those who are physically weak or ill, loving, care, and consideration and sacrifice, that is the first fundamental condition and the cornerstone of every education. So number one, we're all schwitzing because we don't always agree with our spouses, and I don't think he means necessarily that we should, you know, we can not talk it over behind closed doors. But what our kids should see is a unified front. Our kids should never see that one parent feels one way and one parent feels another way. There should be a discussion behind closed doors that the parents discuss their perspectives, but when they come out of that room, it should be very clear that there's a unified front in terms of how to approach the education of that child. That's one thing which you see, says Rav Hirsch, that was not being displayed when it came to Yitzchak and Rivka, simply by the words of Yitzchak Ahavis Esav, Rivka Ahavis Yaakov, right? They clearly were not at least displaying, even if they knew and they had the same score, the manner in which they were manifesting that emotion was clearly not on the same page. But then he goes one step further, and this is fascinating, that Yitzchak's sympathies were more inclined towards Esav. You want to, and Rebekah's to Jacob can more be explained by attraction of opposites. This is what Donnie was saying before. We see Isaac risen up from death on the altar, preferring to withdraw from the bustle of the world and to live quietly in the proximity of the desert, living at the will of the live one who seeth me, away from the busy traffic of men. That Esav's lusty active nature appealed to him, and he perhaps saw in him a force which he had lost, could be a support in the home, which would be quite possible. Fascinating. By the way, the Chasam Sofer, which I saw, says something similar, that there was something that Yitzchak saw in Esav that was so opposite of who Yitzchak was, that he grabbed it. It was like an opposite to track. He was more of a reserved personality, Yitzchak. He was a carbon. He was a person who really did not have much to do with society. He saw Esav presenting the diametric opposition of that. He saw someone who was very much integrated into the world, and he felt that his house needed a little bit of a hustle and bustle, and was attracted to that opposite. And the same thing happens with Rivka, right? That Becca, on the other hand, saw in Yaakov's whole being a picture of life unfolding, of which in her father's house she had never had the remotest idea. The sympathies are explainable, but parents should not allow such hidden feelings to influence them in making any difference in their love towards their children. Wow, that's like an extremely powerful line, right? Basically, for whatever psychological background that Rav Hirsch is trying to give us in terms of the opposites attract, that Yitzchak gravitated more to Esav because of that opposition, and Rivka was attracted to Yaakov because of that opposition, says Rav Hirsch, and again, you and I can't say these things, but Rav Hirsch is saying it, that they made a big mistake. Whatever their personal internal feelings they had about their child at any particular moment, you can't show those feelings to your kid. Sometimes you got to make sure to mask those feelings. Yes, it's important to be genuine. It's important to be authentic with your children. But it's also not good for your kids to see that one of you likes you better than the other. And maybe none of us are to the extent, perhaps, of Yitzchak and Rivka, but I would venture to assume that all of us, you know, everybody likes to ask you have favorites, and we all have favorites at different points in time when different kids are going through different stages of life, and the kids pick up on it, and they understand it, and it hurts. And we don't know what the, you know, the pronounced effects it can have on them later in life, the way in which that relationship continues to develop. And so Rav Hirsch is saying that what Yitzchak and Rivka saw may be in fact valid. We can understand it from an emotional perspective, but at the end of the day, it resulted in this diffusion, in this rupture in a relationship that almost resulted in death. And unfortunately, we are, till this very day, Esav, Sonny, and Yaakov, we are still suffering from till this very day. And it's an important thing to be mindful of, you know, when we're parenting our kids, to realize that as each one of them is going through their different stages, to at this, number one, be unified in terms of what they see, but also not allowing our personal feelings, whether we're more similar to that kid in personality wise, or less similar to that kid, or we get along more with that kid, or we get along less with that kid, to understand that each one of our kids deserve our very best in terms of how we present them and in terms of our parenting. So, in summary, what we've done so far, I'm going to end off with one last thing just because I can't go through Parshas Toldos without mentioning it, it's one of my favorite divrei Torah in this parsha, and I think it does kind of close up shop on this discussion, is we had four different approaches in terms of understanding exactly what was going on with this relationship between Yitzchak and Esav, Rivka and Yaakov. Whether it be the Netziv, that it's not really much beyond the fact that Esav was taking care of Yitzchak, and as a result, he had a certain level of hakaras hatov, a certain level of gratitude, a certain level of affection, which is something to be mindful of his parents as well, right? That even when your children are doing this for you, not to allow it to, you know, overcompensate and allow other children to see it directed in towards, you know, one direction more than the other. Or the Ber Yosef, who based on the Rambam Shmona Prakim, that gives us this insight to the understanding of the mitzvah Sichli and mitzvah Shmi, and where Yitzchak may in fact have thought that Esav might have been on a higher level because he was really running to the wall to attempt at least to do the mitzvahs that otherwise would never would have been commanded. He was impressed by it, whereas Rivka knew the score, having had the Ruach HaKodesh that was shared with her from Shem to Abraham, and knew only one of them was all going to be able to carry the Mesorah. Or this unbelievable insight of the Zichron Meir of Reuben, who explained to us this idea of Yitzchak knew the score, but at the end of the day, he understood that this was not the type of child to push away, but to bring closer, to shower with love. The Vayehav Yitzchak, that Yitzchak really worked on his relationship to demonstrate that love, and something that we as parents, we need to be doing even during those more challenging times, understanding that not every kid receives things the same way. Our final Rav Hirsch, to understand that as parents, we need to demonstrate a unified front to our children. We need to ensure that our children see, even if we ourselves may disagree about something, to talk that out ahead of time, but that we should present as a unified front, not allow our internal personal feelings, our personal, you know, approaches to interfere with the way in which we present to our children. I always feel terrible after these parenting classes because I'm like, I'm a terrible person, and like, you know, oh my goodness, my kids are going to get messed up, and you know, Baruch Hashem, I have a good wife who like prevents that from happening. But I want to close with one piece of chizuk, which I quote all the time. I'll definitely be sharing it this week in Hadar. And that is something that happens at the very end of a very famous episode, and that is, of course, when Yitzchak is sitting Shiva, and Yaakov makes the lentil soup, and Esav comes in, and he's starving, he thinks he's going to die, and Yaakov, for a really good deal, gets probably the best negotiating deal in the history of business, gets the bechorah for a bowl of lentil soup, and at the very end of those psukim, the pasuk says, Vayivez Esav es habechorah. Esav degrades the birthright. Now, and I ask you, do we need the Torah to tell us? We all know how important the birthright is. We all know how in the future this is going to have a tremendously far-reaching impact. Do I need the Torah to tell me that he degraded the birthright? I mean, obviously he degraded the birthright. He sold it for a bowl of lentil soup. I need the Torah to tell me that he degraded the birthright? What is the Torah telling us that I don't already know? It seems to be superfluous, completely unnecessary. So I once heard a beautiful idea from Rabbi Fram in the name of Chasman, and he explains as follows. That as human beings, we all make mistakes. It's a reality on the ground. Our kids make mistakes. We make mistakes. Our buddy makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. It's part of our human nature. The question is never going to be, as a human, whether we make a mistake or not. The question is always going to be, how are we going to respond to that mistake? And we have two options that are before us. One option is, we're going to pretend like the mistake never happened. Never happened. Don't know what you're talking about. Pretend like it never happened. And chances are, in about a month from now, or probably less, we're going to repeat that very same mistake. Or we say to ourselves, we're human beings, and as a result of being a human being, I understand that we make mistakes. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a step back, I'm going to reflect on the mistake, and I'm going to try to improve myself. Says Rav Chasman, you know what the Torah was saying here, Vayiva is Esav Zavah Bechorah? We already know that Esav degraded the birthright. But now Esav had ate his bowl of lentil soup. And he was reflecting, was this a good idea? Should I have sold the birthright for a bowl of lentil soup? Yeah, you know what? And I would have done it again. Vayivez Esav es habechorah. Esav degraded the birthright, not initially, that we know about. But even after the fact, he wasn't willing to take a step back and reflect to see, did I make a mistake? Did I do something wrong? Is there something I can learn from this? This is something that, to me, is so powerful. In school, we always talk, I know in my educational approach, we always talk about school being a microcosm of life, and we want to make sure that they can have the opportunity to make mistakes in a safe environment, and to understand that you're going to make mistakes, so let's learn and capitalize on those mistakes. So, the chizuk that we get from it is that while some of us probably, hearing the various approaches, could think of, I made a mistake in that situation with my kid, and I made a mistake in that situation with my kid, we should understand that that's normal. The question isn't, did we make mistakes or are we going to continue to make mistakes? The real question is going to be, what are we going to do now that the Achronim, that our Gedol Yisrael have caught our attention, have really put this on our radar, that we may need to readjust some of our parenting styles? And if we do that, if we're not like David, Esav, and Sabuchora, if we're not the Esav who doesn't learn from their mistakes, then we'll be, as the Medrash says, we're not Reuvenim, we're not Shimonim, we're Yehudim, because we know that David HaMelech and Yehuda were known to be willing to admit their mistakes. A Jew is a person who reflects, a Jew is a person who understands, who internalizes, and Ritz Hashem, if we walk out of here reflecting on the mistakes that we've made, but not ignoring them, but capitalizing and making us better people and parents, then I think we've done our job. Thank you so much for coming tonight, and have a great night.